This is the Fucking Normal Podcast, the cheers, tears and Friday night beers of parenting disabled children.
I'm Rena.
And I'm Lauren.
And we're both mothers to daughters with special needs. Parenting a disabled child can often feel difficult to navigate. If this is you, you're not alone. We're here to share unique parenting stories and chat about the things that we've learnt and are still learning.
Prepare to sometimes laugh, sometimes cry, but hopefully leave with a shot of optimism in your arm. And don't forget, we are talking from a parent's perspective. We would never presume to talk on behalf of a disabled child or adult. So expect bad language and, quite frankly, some brutal honesty.
Because really, what the fuck is normal anyway?
Wake me up, loud as clouds, all my love for you.
Welcome back to another episode of the Fucking Normal Podcast. Today we're going to be talking about intersectionality and more specifically creating community and representation. First, a quick definition. Intersectionality is about the interconnected nature of social categorizations such as race, class, gender, or ability, which are regarded as creating overlapping or interdependent systems of discrimination or disadvantage. Rena and I are both aware of our own privilege and the lens and experience of the world that we bring to parenting disabled children. We are both white, straight, and cisgendered. We have financial and educational advantages. We have homes, supportive families, and security, not to mention the fact that we are both neurotypical or non-disabled. Our children may carry the labels of disabled or send and may be female, but they also have all of the advantages that we've passed on to them by the luck that they were born with. They may be discriminated against because of their disabilities, but it is very unlikely that they will ever be discriminated against because of their race. We want a world without prejudice that doesn't judge and disadvantage people based on protected characteristics. But sadly, this is not the world we live in. We should all be aware of our own privileges and challenge the systems that continue to enable inequalities to prevail. What if the community or role models for your identity aren't represented in the media or easy to find? As we've said many times before, community is so key to helping you feel less isolated as a parent to children with disabilities. And it's so, so important that our children are able to see themselves, that role models, stories, and resources exist that reflect their identity. Our guest today is an absolute force when it comes to challenging these inequalities and making change.
So our guest today is the incredible Tanuke Awe, social entrepreneur, Black maternal health campaigner, and early years diversity and SEN inclusion champion. She was named British Vogue's Force of Change in 2021. And she really, really is. Tanuke earned the accolade as the co-founder of Five Times More, a campaign dedicated to improving the maternal outcomes of Black women. She has two children, Ezekiel, age 5, who has autism, and Eden, age 3. When her eldest, Ezekiel, was born, Tanuke was frustrated by not seeing any Black mums at the parent group she attended. So she started her own Black parenting network, Mums in Tea, a now 12,000 strong community. Since her son's autism diagnosis, as if she wasn't busy enough, Tanuke has been on a mission to help other Black mums navigate the journey of parenting neurodiverse children and has also started a business focused on inclusive educational flashcards because, as Tanuke rightly puts it, representation matters to all. Welcome, Tanuke. We are so excited to have you on the podcast.
Oh my gosh, what an intro, guys. Blushing.
Like a woman.
I mean, you're amazing. Like, we wanted to talk to you and so glad that we could make this work because I know you're extremely busy. Not to mention the fact it's the summer holidays at the moment. How's that going?
Come back to me in this dump, please. I find just a pile of dust left because I can't. These kids, I love them, but they are literally driving me up the wall. Do you know what? Like, it's so difficult when you're juggling, trying to like work and just there just being a lack of childcare options. And by design, you know, both of the grandmas are away. They're on holiday. They're both in Nigeria. I feel like they planned it. They did it on purpose.
Of course they did. Of course they did.
Because why are you both in Nigeria at the same time? Could you not just go another time? What's up? So the mums that are my normal form of childcare, at least I can hack it for the weekdays, but the weekends I can just, you know, ship them off.
They're both gone. So it's 24/7. Oh. That's why if I come back in 3 weeks, I'm going to be a pile of clothes just left.
Oh, no.
We feel you. We feel you. I had to bribe my mother-in-law to come. So she's here for the next 3 weeks. Right. And I'm ever grateful for that. I can't imagine. I can't imagine. Anyway, can we talk about you and your parenting journey and your kids and motherhood? What is that like? How has that been? Give us the goss.
Oh, the goss. Motherhood, I would say, is such a beautiful roller coaster. I say it's beautiful because you've got the moments where they do things and you're like, oh my God, you are just the best. I love you. Come here, give me a hug. And then there are other times where you're like, get me out of here. just get me out of here. And obviously, I just think parenthood is a challenge in itself. There's no rule book, right? There's no one size fits all. And everyone and their dog on Instagram can be telling you one thing, and you can read a million and one books and memes and quotes. And whilst you can relate to it, it's not what's happening in your home right there and then. So like every situation is new and you're just like, oh my God, what am I doing? And so, yeah, it can be beautiful, but it can be annoying and challenging and frustrating and all these things. And I think sometimes we're not even allowed to voice those frustrations. Do you get what I mean? I feel
completely.
On social media, it's almost like, well, you should be grateful for what you have. I'm not saying I'm not grateful. I'm saying it's hard.
Yeah. That's why we did this podcast.
Thank God. and it's hard. It's hard at every stage as well. I think there's an assumption as well by a lot of parents that are like, oh, this is a really tricky, you know, get through the next 6 months and then it'll be fine. And particularly when you have a child that has, is autistic or has a disability, like that is going to create challenges for potentially longer, or different points of that roller coaster will be maybe higher and some of them will be
lower,
scarier too.
Tell
us a bit about, so Ez is autistic, can you tell us a bit about that journey and his diagnosis?
So I got two kids. Ezekiel's five. Eden is three. Ezekiel was diagnosed with autism on the 24th of July 2021. That date is etched in my brain because it's the date that my life changed forever, if you get what I mean. It's not that it was a diagnosis that I was particularly surprised and shocked about, because obviously you work your way up to a diagnosis, you've got to see all the professionals, you've got to, you know, put in all the requests and do all the things. So it's not like it came as a shock, but it did at the same time. I don't know what led us to the diagnosis. Is so obviously Zeke is my first child, and I noticed quite early on that he wasn't speaking, but it wasn't just the speech, there were other patterns of behavior that had me a little bit worried. Zeke was a clever lad, very clever, but he just couldn't express himself as well as the other children in my, you know, in my circle could. And I realized that quite early on. And so when he was about 18 months old, and I realized that, you know, sometimes he would respond to his name, sometimes he wouldn't. I'm like, I know you can hear me. you know, he'd just be in his own world, you know, spinning toys, spinning around, running up and down, what I now know to be stimming. Running up and down, I was like, oh my God, this boy's got so much energy. He's not communicating with me. Huge attachment issues, like dropping him off at nursery was, oh my God, like, I actually went back to work a lot later than planned because I wasn't comfortable leaving him in any kind of childcare setting, because I was like, I don't really know. Like, I know he's a bit different. He's not communicating. I wasn't comfortable leaving him, you know, in any childcare sitting until I found the right one. So I even went back to work quite late. So yeah, like he would cry loads whenever I'd leave him at the door. You know, like so many of these things. And I guess it got to just before the 2-year checkup, and then I'd heard that the waiting lists for speech and language sessions were like 6 months long at the time. This was before COVID, so I heard that you've got to wait at least 6 months. So I went into a drop-in in my local area, and I was like, okay, my child's almost 2 and he's not really speaking, is this something I need to be worried about? And everyone's like, you know, before the speech, before I went to the drop-in, a lot of people were giving me the, oh, he's a boy, boys talk to Peter, oh, you know, he's fine, he can hear you, if you give him instructions, he can, you know, can just about do, you know, so it's just like, everyone was like, don't worry, it's fine, but I guess in my gut, I kind of like, I was like, I'm not going to do the wait and see approach, I'm going to check and see. That's always my thing, like, don't wait and see, just check and see. There's no harm if there's nothing wrong, there's nothing wrong, but if there is, you're already one step ahead. So I've gone into the drop-in sessions and they were like, oh, we're going to refer you on for actual speech and language sessions. And I was like, okay, great, because at the two-year checkup they were like, oh, you know, we should refer you, and I was like, huh, I'm one step ahead of you, bitch.
Yes,
you got to imagine, like, by the two-year checkup, if I'm waiting another 6 months, he'll be 2.5, whereas I've gone in a lot earlier, and just after two he started receiving those speech and language sessions, which were crap, by the way, but at least that afforded the opportunity for him to be referred on to a pediatrician. Now at this point he's about 2.5, almost three. I think timelines are a bit crazy because this was just before the pandemic. He was about 2.5, I would say. Who referred on to the pediatrician, who at first wasn't worried. She wasn't worried at all. She was like, look, I've seen the speech and language reports, I've looked at the nursery reports, I've spoken to nursery, I've done all these things, not quite worried, we'll give it 6 months. Boom, pandemic hit. And everything was online. So we'd spoken to her, the six months check-in. She was like, yeah, you know, we'll give it another 6 months. You know, it's Zoom, I can't really say much because I haven't seen him in person. And so, yeah, gave it another 6 months. And by then, I think we were up to a year. So he was about 3.5 by this point. And he'd not really, pandemic times, obviously, he'd not really seen anyone. Speech and language was non-existent because we were on a waiting list. And it was, you know, just lockdowns and just a terrible time. But I eventually managed to see the pediatrician in person. And yeah, I should say, so I saw her twice. The first time she wasn't worried. The second time on Zoom, she was like, you know, I've got to see him in person, I can't say anything. But you should start looking at an EHCP. And I was like, oh, okay, what would that be for? So she couldn't say without seeing him that he's autistic, but she was like, I think you should try and, you know, start going down that route. So yeah, she saw him in person. I think it was less than an hour that she was in the room with him for, as a couple of other people in the room. And I didn't actually realize that was the assessment, but she'd actually been doing assessments this whole time and gathering all the data from what I've said and what the nursery said and
right,
the other reports. So then she was like, okay, well, I'm diagnosing him as autistic. And I was like, oh, okay.
Wow.
Okay.
How did you feel? Like, validated, or?
I guess because she had mentioned it. Kind of mentioned it previously, so and I guess I kind of knew, but I didn't really know. I was on that journey, but I didn't know what the end result was going to be. I hadn't really been around many autistic children by that point, and you see the signs, but you're just like, okay, I just maybe need to hear it from a professional. So I felt fine, you know, I felt fine. I'd been doing the research, you know, you kind of type of focus and like, what is autism, is it gonna affect him, is he gonna be okay. So yeah, I had that kind of initial like, oh, it's fine, that, yeah, it's fine. And I remember going that day, she said, your son is still the same child that walked into this room, like it's actually not changed anything. What we're gonna do now, I'll just give him his formal diagnosis and I'll send you off onto some other people. So at the time he was really grinding his teeth, he needed to see a specialist dentist, he needed to see a nutritionist because he just wasn't eating very well at all, and a few other people. But yeah, she was just like, yeah, like, I'll send you back on your way. And I was like, okay, cool. I remember sitting in the car and speaking to like all the family, and it's like, I don't even want to say breaking the news, but yeah, like, just he's got diagnosis now. And I remember saying to the nurse, oh yeah, like, by the way, he's got a diagnosis. And I'm like, oh really? Oh, well, that was quick, that was kind of smooth. And I was like, yeah, that, well, we weren't expecting that, but okay, like, we'll take whatever help comes, you know, from it now. And I must mention, actually, we had the best nursery. So before his diagnosis, and obviously with the help of the pediatrician, she was quite helpful, she had mentioned that Ezekiel needs support in nursery. So before the EHCP, we had, was it an IEP, or we had something in place in our borough to help him get one-to-one support. So he was already, that was in place before the formal diagnosis. So the nursery were already on it. They're brilliant. That's where my daughter goes now. And I'm just like, what am I going to do when I stop having children and I can't send them here? Because they're so good.
That's such a good, because we don't always hear that schools are in place and nurseries are, you know, so this is really refreshing.
And I know, and I think that's part of the reason why we're here today. And actually his story has just been so phenomenal, because we had such great support from the nursery. He was already getting one-to-one support, and with the diagnosis he got, it was more full-time. That was it. We got our EHCP, and he started primary school last September. That was a journey in itself. I think the last year has really shocked me. I've never put limits on Ezekiel, never. So I must mention, obviously, we've gone for the speech and language because he was completely nonverbal. We were doing a Makaton. We were using, some visual aids, not representative ones because there weren't any at the time.
We'll come back to that in a second. Yeah.
Come back to that. But we were using all that kind of stuff. But actually, it wasn't until he started primary school that his words really started to come through. So he was exhibiting a lot of echolalia. Like this time last year, if you ask Ezekiel, how are you? He'll say, Ezekiel, how are you? Right. You couldn't have a conversation with him. He was just saying words and repeating back phrases from like TV and stuff, you know, typical echolalia. Now you ask him, Ezekiel, how are you? He'll go, I'm good.
Sweet.
So I think, again, he might have learned that. But I think he's getting the whole back and forth kind of conversation. Like since starting school, his language has really exploded. You can't kind of have a conversation with him just yet, but his language is getting better, should I say. So he can say he wants to go to the toilet. And that's even a thing in itself.
Massive.
Toilet. Ezekiel was still in nappies. I was so nervous about sending him to school because it's a mainstream school. They're a brilliant school. Again, I did my research, looked at the schools in the area, made sure that I felt comfortable sending him there, and I got a good vibe because there were some schools that, you know, with some autism DSP units, and I would ask questions and the head teachers would look at me like, what are you talking about? Or it wasn't giving. And I was like, there's no way I'm sending my child here. No, absolutely no way. So when I got a good feeling from a really brilliant school, a really small school, kind of family kind of feel, vibe to it, I've come in with my iPad and my 25 questions. So head teacher, have you had a child like Ayers? What was the progress like? You know, what's your bullying policy? All of the questions. And she's gone, yep, 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 yep. She's answered everything perfectly. I'm like, you were waiting for me, weren't you? So funny, because at the end of the school year, we had a moment, actually, me and the head teacher, and we were just, she shed a tear. She's like, I can't believe this is the same boy from last year. Aww. Like, he's actually really, like, being in school and getting that one-to-one support and just being around other children has really helped him, because he's copying them, which is great, because he's copying going to the toilet, he's copying play, he's playing with others, he's got friends, he's using his words. He's a totally different child, and I'm just grateful for that. But I know that's not everyone's kind of experience at school. I know that's not everyone's experience at mainstream school. I'm just grateful, touch wood, that everything's been going really well so far. My guy can count to 100 now. He can write his name. I'm like, who are you? You're just, oh my God.
Getting that milestone. It's like,
I'm really proud of him. And everyone's always like, you know, on Instagram, because I share my journey quite a lot on Instagram. And I know we'll go into this, but I share my journey with Ezekiel quite a lot. And everyone's like, oh, you know, he's so brilliant, he's so amazing. But you know what? It's good on you as well as a parent, as a mum, because you stuck in there and you kind of didn't let like the world's report, if you like, determine what you do with your son and how you treat him. You just went, you did it, and you're giving me so much hope, and that makes me feel like so blessed. Because in our community, like I say, in the Black community, like autism is heavily stigmatized. There was even a viral video on the weekend someone sent me of a pastor praying for a child, you know, binding and casting out autism because they don't believe in it. It's scary stuff. And I was like, you know what, it's I'm a Christian. It's one thing praying for your child. You can pray for your child. You can pray that they will find favor. You can pray that, you know, like whenever they get out into the world, like good things will happen to them and stuff like that. You could, whatever your that spiritual higher power being is, you can pray to that person. But then to start saying that finding and casting out autism, like it doesn't exist, and don't bother going to the therapist because they don't know nothing, you've got to, you know, pray to God and fast and everything's going to go away, that's scary. And that's the kind of community I'm from. So I think in me sharing, look, autism is not a death sentence, it's not the end of the world, do you know what I mean? Sharing the highs, sharing the lows, sharing kind of my journey, it's helping other people to see that actually maybe autism isn't as scary as people make it out to be, you know? And for me, that's important, because I remember when 2-3 years ago, when I was looking for representation and people that looked like me who had autistic children that looked like my son, it was very few and far between. And that's quite scary, because you'll think, well, I'm the only one, or it doesn't apply to me. Because you type in autism, it's white children that come up. It's white men that come up. They don't look like me and my child at all. They don't. It doesn't. It's only in the last, I'd say, because of TikTok and maybe because of the pandemic, that people are now more vocal about that. But before that, nothing.
And did you, because you already had Mums and Tea, which was your community of parents. When you say you were looking for it, like obviously looking for, you know, more Black autistic children, I guess, did you go to that network as well? Did you find, were there autistic kids within the parenting network, or kids that were perhaps maybe without diagnosis, but were going, mums that were going through a similar experience to you? How did that evolve kind of?
I did, but that's only because I feel through Mums and Tea, I've been able to build a network.
Yeah.
So I'm in a position where I can be like, oh my God, I remember when I was going through the EHC process, there was a little bit of it that I just had a little bit of an issue with, a little bit of a problem, because the borough was being stupid, you know what it's like, right?
Yeah.
And I've put on my Instagram, does anyone know any educational psychologists or any people that work in X, Y, and Z? And the influx that I got, like the way the community supported me and poured into me and gave me all of the information they had, or ex-teachers or ex-nursery workers with experience, like, do you know what I mean? I was like, I've just put out a story and I've got literally like a minimum 50 people coming back to me. That's only because I've got this huge platform. If I didn't have that, where would I begin to look? Where would I go?
Yeah.
Who could I turn to? And so it's important that when I have these kind of issues, or if anything happens and it's, you know, to do that, that could help someone else, I'm putting that out there, and I'm hoping that other people can connect to one another as well, because I can't just be this person.
Not all to you, no, down to you.
But I think it's important, because there are now that I've built the network, I can see that there are so many mums out there that are trying to share that knowledge, to bring people together, and it's looking a lot better than it did 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, and it absolutely shouldn't be down to you just being on, having that network. I don't know how many people are in Mums and Tea, the community now, but it's huge, right? But isn't there like now a specific branch that's relating to parenting kids with special needs?
I'm definitely really passionate about that. So Mums and Tea overall, it started off because, like you mentioned in the bio, I just wanted to find a network of parents that look like me, and there's a reason for that. It's not saying that I can't go to any, you know, parent group and relate. I have done that, I do that, but it's important to note that I'll give you an example. I live in a very, what you call, urban area. Heavily populated with a lot of Black people, right? But when I was going to all of the baby, you know, stay in plays and all these group sessions and stuff, I was the only like young Black mum. And that was worrying to me, because I'm like, okay, I can talk to all of you. That's fine. We're all pretty much at the same stage of motherhood and we can talk about stuff. But fundamentally, I'm raising a Black man.
Hmm.
There are certain conversations that you're just not going to be able to understand. And that's just fundamentally. And you always seek people that look like you, right? That have similar backgrounds to you and can understand where you're coming from. So it's not that I felt othered, but I felt like, where are my people, kind of, you know?
That community, so isn't it?
Yeah.
It's fundamentally about having a community that is, you know, of people that are coming from the same place as you. Like, I mean that more in terms of like, you know, life experience and
cultural background. Absolutely. You'll never understand what it's like to have a Nigerian mother saying to you, give the baby water, when the midwife has told you categorically do not give the child water before, you know, for 4 or 6 months, and they're like, hey, where we come from, it's fine, you give them water, they don't die. So it's like, what's up, like, who do I listen to? Like, I'm confused, like, what do I do? Because I remember putting that on Instagram and everyone was like laughing, but a lot of people were like, yeah, I get this. This is real life. But there are deeper issues. There are deeper things than just that. And I think it's important to have that sense of community. So that's why I set up Mums in Tea, because I wanted to connect to people and connect with people. I was the first one out of my friends to have a baby. And I didn't want to be a loner. and I wanted people to connect to one another. So that's how that started. But back to your question, in terms of like, it's important because we've got that, we had the face-to-face events.
Hmm.
And we start building our community on like Instagram and like face physical. Then during the pandemic and lockdowns, we went online. So we've got an online community, we've got an online platform, we've got different groups within that. And one of the subgroups is parents for SEM parents. And a lot of the questions that go in there, it's like an upgraded version of a WhatsApp group chat, if that makes sense. Like it doesn't feel as, oh my God, there's so many messages, you can put like topics and it's like really, yeah, quite sophisticated. And people can just put in questions and people can answer based on their experiences. But I think it's just so important to have that space, because SEM parenting is just another level. And you add in being Black. Yeah.
So totally get it. And it's beautiful what you've done. Honestly, it's beautiful. I'm in awe of you. So, yeah.
What challenges and issues are coming up for others within that SEND community, if you're happy to talk about these? You don't know how much is ableism or the fact that we're in a society that has entrenched systemic racism. You know, what sort of challenges are you seeing, and to what extent are they the result of covert or overt racism?
I think some of the issues are twofold, probably three or four or fivefold if I really go into it. But you've got issues from within the community, and then you've got issues outside of the community that you've got to deal with. Mm. Issues within the community stem from if you attend a church or a place of religious practice, and you could potentially tell them, oh, you know, I feel like maybe my child has got additional needs, or they've just got a diagnosis or anything. You could get one of two responses. That's okay, it's fine, we'll pray. Or no, don't say that, that doesn't exist. You know, or just completely be ignored and not be supported and not be helped. Be shunned, you know, because your child is being loud in the service. They're trying to get on with things and they don't quite understand that you've got to make reasonable adjustments. It's, as I mentioned before, it's heavily stigmatized because a lot of people just don't understand it. They don't understand it. They might think it's the work of the devil, or somebody in a village somewhere has done some Black magic, and this is the result of, you know, what we're seeing. Or they just don't know or don't understand it at all, and they fear it, you know. So there's a lot of fear in the community. There's a lot of, you know, misunderstanding. As I mentioned before, if you type in autism, you don't see many images of Black people with autism. So automatically, one will just assume that's a Western condition. That's not something that affects us. That's not something that applies to us.
Or like they haven't been exposed to it as well, because if it's something that's stigmatized, then that means it's hidden and therefore you're not exposed to it and therefore you fear it. So it's like a long circle of,
yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? The media and social media, they play a huge part in people's thinking as well. We've got to remember. So if they're not seeing it, they don't believe it, then they fear it because they don't know it, and then it just continues, right? Mm-hmm. Someone somewhere has to break that cycle. And I think I'm seeing a lot of parents now coming out and autistic people themselves coming out and saying that this is the real deal. This is what autism looks like. It can present differently and all of these kind of things. But so you've got that, you know, within the community. And it's not just church. It could be family members too. I'll give you an example. And they've both changed. This is a huge disclaimer. They have both changed in their thinking. Before anyone goes attacking my mum and my mother-in-law. But I even remember when I first told both my mum and my mother-in-law, different occasions, both of their reactions made me quite upset. My mum was like, oh, don't say that, God forbid, you know, automatically just rejecting it, you know, over my dead body. That's not, don't say that about my godson. That's, you know, an abomination. That, don't say that about him. Don't proclaim that on his life. That's a big thing. Don't, if you say it, that means it's true. So don't say it. And I was quite upset because I was like, this is coming from someone who's, you're well educated. You literally just done a master's in public health. You've worked with people with additional needs like for a long time. Why would you say this? Why would you think this doesn't apply? Please make it make sense. This is not even coming from someone that doesn't understand autism. Do you know what I mean? So she was found it very difficult at first to accept. And also, like, my mother-in-law was like, oh, no, God, why me? You know, like, as if it's like a curse.
Hmm.
And with time, with educating, with loads of conversations and all of, they both obviously changed their way of thinking and how they view autism and stuff, but that's because they've been exposed to it. Now, if I didn't have a child with autism, I don't know if they would have ever got that kind of level of information. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is why they say, like, knowledge is power. So my mother-in-law works in a school, and she's very cognizant of this little young boy who also has autism. She's a dinner lady. She works in a school and she's very cognizant of this young boy who's autistic. She'll, like, give him little bits of bread if he's hungry or little things, and she's always kind of like, her heart just goes out to him whenever he comes in the dinner line. He might not want certain food, so she'll go and get something in the back, and she's like, that could be my grandson, kind of thing. Whereas before, she might not have cared, she might not have known, she might just thought, well, maybe this kid is just acting up in the line, and why has this kid always got support? Like, she would have just made assumptions and she wouldn't have known. Do you know what I mean? And so it's important that we continue speaking out and we continue having these conversations, because that's the only way we're going to spread the knowledge out there. I'm so grateful for both of the mums' journeys and how they've grown to, like, learn and accept and just know more about autism and how it affects Ezekiel and how it could affect other people as well, because now they're actually looking at adults in their circles that could potentially be autistic. Because that's another thing, it's not that it doesn't exist in our community. There's so many, like, when you look at, like, my mum was like, oh, you know what, now that I know what some of the signs are, there are certain people, like, maybe even at church, people who have grown up with, you know, that could be autistic. Maybe that explains their behaviour, you know. These are conversations I'm literally having with my mum.
That's so interesting.
And you just, unless you're having these conversations, you won't know. So yeah, that's one thing that you could come up against. I've heard people, oh my gosh, I've heard people who have said their parents have gone to, you know, to gone back home. When I say home, I mean in the context of going like maybe Nigeria or Ghana or wherever it may be. I've gone to pastors and asked them for prayer water, special water for them to pray over their child and bath them in certain things and do. And I'm just like, whoa. It's not that deep. But because they don't know and they fear it, they think it's something that needs to be prayed out. But so these are certain things that people are having to deal with just within their immediate kind of community. Then you've got the certain health professionals. They're quick to label. And if you as a parent are being told, being shut down, oh no, it's not autism, it's, you know, whatever, whatever. And then your child starts misbehaving, quote unquote, inverted commas, you know, they're stimming or they're having a hard time or whatever. That's going to be misinterpreted as bad behavior because guess what? They're already Black. That's the reality. And when I say I need to speak to people who understand where I'm coming from, I've lived that. I am that. Mm-hmm. I need to speak to people who understand where I'm coming from because I need to have conversations with people who get that. When I say I'm raising a Black child, you know exactly what I mean, right? The whole systemic things that go on that you actually just don't have control over. So you've got the health professionals, you've got things and people in the system who, I can't even remember what the statistic is, but Black children are more likely to get a diagnosis, but less likely to get the help and the support that they need, which is very, very scary.
That's insane. If they're getting diagnosed more than,
yeah. And those are, you just think if they're more likely to get a diagnosis, these are the ones that made it.
Yeah.
What about all the ones that didn't? What about all the ones that are yet to come? What about
because of some of the stuff that you've, yeah,
exactly,
already talked about?
So that's hard. And then you think, so I've got a friend that works in public health and she was telling me some stats. I love stats, although I can't remember half of them all of the time, but I'm definitely a stat woman. I love the stats. She was saying the amount of Black men in the prison system and in the mental health system, you know, that actually have underlying speech and language issues, I have underlying autism, ADHD, whatever it may be, that are basically in the wrong place because they didn't get support when they were in primary school, is astonishing. Put it this way, a speech and language woman that I worked with a long time ago, she said, right, I'll put it this way. This is why you need to get help for your children as soon as you even, there's an inkling that there could be something there. Start of the year, there's Billy and there's Jamal. Billy who's white, Jamal who's Black. They're presenting with the same problems. By the end of the year, Billy would have gotten the help and support he needs. Jamal would have been excluded. When you say it like that, that's fucked.
Completely fucked.
Yeah.
these are the type of things that you've got to think about. You've got your family, you've got the community, you're coming in, the schools, the nurseries. I've had a great experience at nursery. That's not been everybody's case. That's not everyone's story. Before you even think of EHCP, before you even get there, the amount of trouble, the lack of knowledge. I know that this is actually just a wider thing, but I think it's just that, not even that the knowledge isn't accessible, but if you don't have communities like my own, the amount of people that come onto my post, one of my most favorited posts is like, it's not privilege, it's entitlement, just things that you can, like little things that you can be potentially eligible for if your child has additional needs. So like DLA, that's a big one. A lot of people don't know you don't actually need a diagnosis for a DLA, for DLA. A lot of people don't know how to access that, what to do. A lot of people are like waiting for speech and language or want to pay for speech, private speech and language, because you wait on the NHS, you wait until you die. And I'm like, oh, by the way, you can apply for DLA and get this on DLA. So like, they don't even have the knowledge to be able to help their children. And when they get there, they're faced with so many barriers. You know, it's depressing.
It is. Do you know what makes it worse, though? It's the fact that, like, Lauren and I are white, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we've had an easy ride with anything disability related, let alone if we were Black and English wasn't our first language. We would be fucked, because how are you going to access support, speak to people who understand what you're going through, and get help to access things that your child is entitled to that you have no clue about? It is awful, awful, awful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot. And I just think, you know, as a community, we are highly, 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 highly underserved, highly underserved. And I just think more needs to be done. Just point blank, period. Awesome. Like, more needs to be done at every level to just educate people about, you know, what you're entitled to, what additional needs means, what it looks like, how it can affect you, and what you can do to help yourself. And if you're not a parent to a child with additional needs, and you know someone who potentially in your circle, and how you can be of support, how you can be of help, and not just, you know, be an active bystander and just, oh, you know, I feel really sorry for you. But I'm grateful to be in a position where my friends are so understanding. My family is so super supportive, but not everybody is like, it gets that. Not everyone gets that, especially not in the Black community.
But you are a ray of light at the end of a tunnel, so you should be incredibly proud of yourself that you've created this safe space and are enabling Black women to get together and help each other out. But it must be really exhausting.
It must be so exhausting. Yeah, I was going to say, you're shining a light on something. And I feel like the story that you described with the mother-in-law and mother, it's like that's kind of in a microcosm of what you were describing initially around representation and just not seeing Black autistic representation. Now, you know, you and Ezekiel have in that circle shone a light and represented something. It was so sweet what you were saying about your mother-in-law when she's looking after this autistic kid that could be my grandchild, but you can't do it all. And it's amazing that you have this platform and you're able to share your stories and bring people together, like Rina said. I guess, what can people listening to this podcast do? What, not that you should be the one having to tell people what to do, but just if we were throwing ideas around, how can people be actual, like, allies in the actions that they do, rather than, you say, like, just being an active bystander?
No, absolutely. So I guess in terms of that, just like I said, it's just the representation that needs to be there. So I've written a few articles online for some, you know, some publications, just to try and make sure that, like, especially in the media, autism doesn't just look one way. And I'm conscious that I'm not autistic and I'm a parent. So I'm advocating as a parent. It's important to listen to the autistic voices that are out there. And there are so many, because my boy, he's a little boy, he's a little five-year-old boy now, but he will one day grow and be an adult, and he'll be an autistic adult. So I think it's really important that we're listening to the actual voices and experiences of people who are autistic out there. That's first and foremost, because they've got a voice. But I think sharing the knowledge and information, for me, that's first and foremost, because you don't know what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what you don't know. I do, like, once in a while I'll do, like, Instagram lives with experts and stuff, and the amount of, like, feedback I get from that, because people will drop gems in there, and it's like, oh my god, I didn't know that, I didn't know you were entitled to that, I didn't know you could do this, I didn't know. So that's, information is like golden, especially when you're a parent to a, you know, a child with additional needs. What else can people do out there? Keep the conversation going. Don't be afraid to call stuff out. Don't be afraid to bring stuff up. Mm-hmm. An article I wrote recently was how aunties and uncles and godparents can have the conversation if you think a child might be autistic, because I know parents can be really precious and really, you know, protective of their children, which they have every right to be, but because of all the issues I spoke about in the community, sometimes actually people are not willing to accept even thinking about that there might be something there, because I think deep down everyone knows whether you want to accept it or not, everyone knows that their child might be a little bit different. If that's the case, everyone knows, right? But sometimes they just need a kick up the bum, or they might need, maybe I don't want to call it confirmation from someone else, but someone else to be like, hey, I've noticed this, have you? Or, you know, it might not be my place to say, but I just wanted to raise it anyway. You know, take it how you want. I'm not trying to offend you. I'm not trying to, you know, we need to get better at having these conversations. It can only come from people that you're really, really close to. It can't just come from a random person on the street. It's got to come from love. But we have to get better at having these conversations, because you could, it's not, if fundamentally and essentially, it's not about the parent. I know we do great jobs. We are, you know, we're helping our children and whatever. But it's not about us and our feelings. It's about the child at the end of the day, no matter what. So I was writing in that article that there are all of these heavy things in the community, but actually you could be adding so much more to an autistic person's life if you speak to their parent and their parent's like, you know what, actually I have noticed that, thank you for signposting me to this information, I'll look into it. And then they go and, you know, and go and get support, only because you've just had that one conversation that they were scared to have with themselves. So yeah, spreading the information, having conversations, they sound really simple, but they can make the world of a difference.
Honestly, I feel you on this so much, because I come from Kosovo. It's like Eastern European country, and disability is like the biggest taboo still to this day. So my mother-in-law and mother had the exact same reaction as yours, exactly the same. It took years for them to like go through the process of grief and like accept Lua, and I still think sometimes they struggle with like fully accepting her disabilities. They love her and cherish her and everything, but it's still that kind of difficulty, because it's like a taboo thing. And like Kosovan, Albanian, Eastern Europeans having a disability, you don't see none of that shit anywhere, because they up until very recently would hide these children away from society and just keep them locked up as if they didn't exist. And then once I started like being on Instagram more, and I've had loads of people reach out to me, like, thank you, because actually my brother, who's like an adult now, was hidden away basically all of his life, and it's awful. But talking about it and being much more open about things educates, then it's the acceptance, and then it just like breaks the terrible cycle that our families and our parents and their parents brought up. So it's enriching people's lives by, you know, our wonderful children.
No, I absolutely agree. And I feel like when we've got these platforms, it's so important that we do, we're highlighting this, because we obviously care enough to have a platform. Because if you didn't care, not that other people don't care enough, maybe they might be too scared or whatever it may be, but we care and we've taken that big bold step. And so we have kind of a little bit of a duty to like put that stuff out there and really tell the truth and really make that difference. And my thing is, if you make a difference in one person's life, that's it. That's all. That's enough for me. That's literally, that's enough for me, because I've done my job, you know? So we have to, we absolutely have to, like, scary stuff. People being locked away, literally.
And we have that same kind of convos like with people not accepting that their kid, like I have a friend, her daughter quite clearly is autistic, and she refuses to even think about the fact that her daughter is autistic. And her sister-in-law is a very good friend of mine, and she's reached out and was like, what do you think? I want to know what you think. And I was like, yeah, I think she's clearly showing signs to me of autism. I would highly suggest you get a diagnosis, because you'll open up so many doors for her. Early intervention, all of the things that we know. And she relayed this to and she was like having none of it. And it's like, I've done my job, I've been there, but it's then up to you to take it on board. And some people are just not ready for it, and it's really disheartening and sad, but it's also like, it takes time, and I understand that completely.
Yeah, that conversation may still have a very positive impact on that child, it just may not be now.
That's true. Talking about stuff like that, oh my god, you just reminded me of a lady that I spoke to recently. She said that her brother's autistic, and she's Nigerian background like me, and she said that her parents, when her brother was in school, the school was saying, look, he's autistic, like, you know, we've got to do some things, and they're like, but he's good at maths, so so what's the problem, he's good at maths, cool.
Like a lazy autistic trope of like the genius autistic kid.
Yeah,
but
he's good at maths, yeah. So I've heard this too.
So in primary school he got a little bit of support, but when it got to secondary school they were like, we don't want a label, we don't want any help, it's okay, he's good at maths, he's good to go. He struggled in secondary school, somehow made it, got his grades, somehow passed, got into college. He's in university at the moment, didn't get any support, but he's been trying to finish his degree for the past, I think she said 4 or 5 years, but he doesn't get that extra help because he obviously doesn't have an EACP. There's only so much, you know, he can do. And I was just oh my God. Like, okay, so he's trying to finish his university degree, hasn't had any support. And I'm just thinking, wow. So the parents knew, did nothing, allowed him to struggle. By the way, he can't really write, but he's good at maths, but he can't really write. So he can't even get a scribe. So this boy is just struggling.
And he must feel so disheartened because he'd think that it's his fault that he can't, when actually it's not. Like, oh, that's so sad.
It's the saddest, sweetest story, because obviously good on him for like trying to get so far. But imagine how far he could be if his parents just said, yeah, okay, let him get support and the help that he needs. And this is what I mean. It's not about you. It's about your fucking child. Like, I just think, oh my God, do you not care about your child? Like, you care more about the label than you care about your child. And furthermore, this label that you don't want to accept actually unlocks a lot more support and help for you, the parent. Furthermore, us, even that we've accepted the label, do you understand that we're stressed out because they're not even doing what they're supposed to do? So you having the label, accepting that you need the help, that's only half, because on the other side you still got a fight. What are you not gathering? It's not all fun and roses and Teletubbies over here. It's hard. Why would you do that? I don't mind stepping on people's necks. Like, in my Instagram lives, I'm like, you know what? I'm tired of sugarcoating it for you lot. I don't care. You lot need to really get your ish together, because it's hard. You're already 10 steps behind and you want to be more even. No, that's your own. Don't come back. Don't come back in 10, in when they're about to start school. And this is what I mean. Like, when I say Black children present later, it's because of this very thing. Because the parents don't want to accept the label. And then when it's, I don't even want to say too late, but when it's like, you know, just to that point where like, they're about to get kicked out of school, maybe we should think about it. Do you not realise? Excuse me now. It's too late. You could have avoided all of this. We didn't need to be here. So yeah, like I make it comical, but I'm also trying to really like hone in on that point that you don't accept this label of autism, your child will be labeled something else, especially in the school system. So wear it like a badge of honor. Accept it. Accept your child. Move on. Your child is always going to be autistic. And that's that. And furthermore, sorry, I keep saying furthermore, like, I'm ready to fight.
I love it.
I'm in a privileged position because I'm here now with all this experience and I've built this network. If I could speak to me 2-3 years ago, I'd be like, yay, go you. This is great. I love this for you. I just think if you don't accept that label, it's gonna come back and bite you in the bum. you love your child, and if your child didn't have that additional need or that disability, they wouldn't be who they are. You can't will it away, you can't pray it away, you can't wish it away. This is the situation that it is. The quicker you accept it, the quicker you can get help in early intervention, all of these things. Like, people are like, oh my God, how did you do this with early intervention? It wasn't just by design. It's early intervention. We got in there quick. It's not now that he's 10, 11, 12, trying to get to school, and he's had a shit time in primary school, and now, you know, we're thinking, oh, you know, for secondary school, maybe things can be... No, why do that to your child?
No, exactly.
But yeah.
Just to kind of pivot slightly, you're talking about early intervention. Tell us about... because you are a force. I love that you're looking forward and seeing yourself in 2 years' time. And would you also have imagined that you'd have seen an issue that started your business representation with Ayres and just help make it happen? Can you tell us about Learning with Ayres and what precipitated that?
Learning with Ayres is my baby. So I started it actually before I knew that Ayres was autistic, and our autistic friendly range only came out a couple of months ago. But essentially, because I was kind of, I'm that mum, right? Let me just say, look, I'm Nigerian. I'm the firstborn Nigerian girl in a Nigerian household. The firstborn gets it. You're a girl, forget it. The pressure is on. So for me, education has been drummed into my head. Like, I love anything to do with education, anything with reading books. That's a bit of me. So I'm definitely a self-proclaimed nerd. And I've just come from that. My mum was a teacher, and I'm Nigerian. We love education. We love just anything education, bring it. So I studied psychology. I've just always been really interested in books, child development, that kind of thing. So when I had my son, I naturally wanted to like read him loads of books and do like educational stuff with him at home. And I was trying to just like do simple things like find a poster of body parts in the local pound shop, you know? And lo and behold, all of the illustrations were white. I wasn't really struggling for books, but in terms of like actual resources to support with education, I was like, this is frustrating. I'm literally having to look for stuff in America and pay for shipping. That's long. I'm not trying to do that. And if I'm frustrated, then somebody else out there will be also feeling what I'm feeling. So that's how Learning with Ayres was born, because I wanted my son, not just my son, but other people that look like my son, to see themselves represented in their learning, but also for other children to see what the world looks like around them. Because if I'm looking for things in the shop and all of the characters are white, that means that potentially white parents are buying white things for their kids as well, and that's not great either.
No,
that's what the world looks like. It's just not representative.
Amen.
Yeah. So I started Learning with Ayres because I actually just I fundamentally wanted that to change. I hate injustice. I hate things that just don't sit right with me, and I really wanted to change it. So yeah, started off with some flashcards. Initially it was number flashcards, alphabet flashcards. Now we've got a whole range. We've got emotion flashcards, we've got our autism friendly range, which consists of toilet training cards and the daily routine cards as well. So Learning with Ayres started because I was really looking for visual aids to support with his communication needs. So all of the like pecs and like the things I was buying on Amazon, they were like stick men, or they were like of white children. And I was like, my son's really visual. So if he's seeing white children, he might not know that I'm trying to apply this to him. Mm-hmm. And where I noticed when I'm reading books that look like him, or I've got things that, you know, just represent him, he pays attention. So he's clearly a very visual person. He can't communicate that with me, but I'm looking at his behaviors, I'm looking at what he's paying attention to, and I can see he's definitely way more engaged when the characters look like him. So I was like, okay, I'm missing the trick here. Let's literally build a brand based off of him and his friends. So that actually the full name of Learning with Ayres is Learning with Ayres and Friends, because it's actually based off of like all the characters are his actual friends.
Oh, so cute. How's it going? How's it going learning with us? We'll obviously like link all of this in the show notes for people to visit your website and shop and all the rest of it. But how's it going?
Yeah, no, it's going really well. I'm super, super excited. So this time last year, I was actually doing a fundraiser, a Kickstarter campaign, because I was trying to raise the funds to do this very project, the autism friendly cards, but I didn't quite meet my target, which was a bummer. But I wasn't going to let like anything like that stop me. So over the past year, I've been busy working behind the scenes and like doing like various courses, applying for like pitch competitions, doing loads of things in the background. And I was able to launch those cards a couple of months ago, and I'm just really happy, because I actually got a message. I screenshot it. I'm just going to read it out because I'm so proud. So this woman goes, "Hi, Tinacare. I just wanted to let you know that with the help of your cards, we've finally been able to potty train our 4-year-old. I had resigned myself to the fact that his autism would mean that potty training would continue to be difficult and that he just wouldn't understand it. But after showing him the cards every day for about 2 weeks, we finally took the nappy off and he picked it up in the space of a few days."
Wow.
Oh my God, that's
amazing.
You should be so proud of yourself for being able to facilitate that, which is like, for me, it's like a goal for Lua to not to be potty trained. So for you and your incredible idea to help a special needs child get there is just...
We applaud you. That's amazing. It's really, really, really cool. And like you said before, that you just want to help one person. It sounds like you're helping fucking shitloads of people. And we haven't even talked about 5 times more, which for people who don't know, is a huge, huge campaign that you've spearheaded.
Sorry, just having a bit of a moment.
Sorry. Take your moment.
Enjoy that moment. You should be so proud of yourself, honestly.
How hard it is. I tried to put train his kid for years and he just wasn't ready, and I just thought, we're not gonna force him. If he's not ready, I'm sending him to school with nappies. It's fine, you know. If I have to come in every time and then I just live around the corner, I'll do it.
It's really emotional
to be able to use these cards to help him and then help others. Means the world. Like, I can't put a price on it. I cannot put a price on the fact that through my experience and being able to push through at someone else's child now is pretty trained. Like, I can't even get my head around it. I know how many times I would go to bed crying, thinking, my God.
Yeah, it's really emotional. I think I'm also crying because I'm so fucking envious of her too. So
guys,
a massive thing. That's
for me, you know, that's if I never sell another Learning with S thing again, that's fine. I've done my job.
You are doing so much, and it's all so close to home for you. You know, your job is your life. And how do you create boundaries, and how do you like cope with the fact that, you know, all of these things are emotionally going to take so much out of you? How do you do that, Tinuke?
I didn't used to do it very well. I'll tell you that for free. I didn't. I had no boundaries. I cared way too much. I burnt myself into the ground loads of times. Neglected my family. Just did the most. I didn't know how to regulate. I didn't know how to say no before. It was hard until I got to a point where I was like, you know, I can't juggle this, juggle that, juggle work, juggle an additional needs kid. I couldn't I couldn't do it. And I'm a recovering people pleaser, so that was really hard. If anyone wanted anything, I'd just be like, yeah, sure, why not? You know, I found it so hard to say no. I found it so hard to put boundaries in place, even though I knew if I said yes, I'd struggle. And I think after Ezekiel's diagnosis, I actually fell into a deep depression. Not because of the diagnosis, well, partly because of the diagnosis, but partly because at that point in time, I was working full time. My daughter hadn't had, she didn't have a nursery place at the time. So I was working from home with a 1-year-old, having to pause in like various times of the day, a couple of times a week to take Ezekiel to therapy, speech and language, play, whatever it may be, occupational health, you know, you name it. We were doing it all, and coming back and having to finish off work and having to do 5 times more stuff and having to think about learning with SLs and having to cook dinner and be everything to everyone. And I woke up one day and I said, I can't do this. Something has to give, otherwise I'm going to go. Like, my mental health is just going to go in the bin, in the gutter. And it just wasn't, I had to obviously discuss with my husband. I said, this is not an easy decision to make because obviously finances, and we've got 2 kids and it's hard. But he was supportive and we somehow managed to work it out. Like, but I quit my job. I quit my job because I could not do it all.
Mm.
I didn't want to let go of 5 times more because it's so impactful. We're doing so much in that space, especially at the time as well. It was just a lot going on. I believed so much in learning with Ez too, right? You know, if I didn't keep going.
Yeah. Damn right.
But obviously as a small business owner and 5 times more as a CIC, and we actually rely very heavily on donations, it's been hard.
Mm-hmm.
Behind the Instagram, behind it all, it's I'll just be completely honest, it's been tough, but it's been the right decision for my family, because in that, me saying, you know what, no, I can't do this, I've been able to create those boundaries. I've been able to be more flexible with working for myself. So that means I'm able to be more on hand with my family. I utilize the functions on my phone, you know, the do not disturbs, the work mode, all of that kind of stuff. I've learned how to just say no if it doesn't suit me, or if I need to reschedule, hence why.
I'm not offended in
that. But you know what? I'm just really honored that you've really been working on saying no, and you've still agreed to come on our podcast. That means a lot to us, because you have got so much going on, and you're damn right, you have to create those boundaries and prioritize what you really want to invest your time in. So yeah, thank you again for affording us the time.
Oh my god, thank you for inviting me. Like, sheepishly after, like, what happened the last time you guys were on the call, and I had completely forgotten. I was just sitting there. I was doing
nothing. You're exposing yourself.
I am. I need to tell myself off. I was sitting there and you messaged me and I was like, oh my god. Oh my god. And we've been trying to reschedule for the longest time, and I've come back to your email because it was unread in my inbox, and unread means answer it at some point, right? And I've come back sheepishly. I was like, are you still interested in having me? I'd love to come on. And you said yes. And I was like, oh my god, thank you guys. Thanks for understanding.
No, we get it. We get that. I mean, god, you know, I, similar to you, made a decision a few years ago after trying to juggle like crazy to walk away from the corporate job that I was doing, because it just wasn't working for me and my family. It just wasn't working. And so you're very lucky to have a situation where you can be supported and make those decisions. But yeah, everyone's got to do what's right for them and their family if they can.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of like, yeah, how do I do it all? And people always ask, how do you juggle it? How do you do it? I'm like, I don't know. When you have an answer, yeah, when you have an answer, let me know. But for now, we're just roughing it out.
Just get through the summer holidays. Just get through the summer holidays.
Let me get through the next 3 weeks and I'll be good.
Well, it's been amazing to talk to you. We are so pleased that you agreed to come on and have been so open and honest with us about your experiences and tell us about, oh my God, all the stuff that you've got going on and how you're touching other people's lives. It's just absolutely brilliant. And we will signpost everything in our show notes so people can get involved, help, go on and see what Learning with Airs is all about, and wish you so much success with it, just so that we can hear the thousands of versions of that message that you read out, how many people that you can help.
But don't read anymore, because then I'll start crying again and again and again and again.
I can't even, I don't have no energy to cry. I'm starving. So I have no more messages. It's okay.
Thank you. Save my tears.
Oh, and it'd be like,
oh, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Though. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think I could talk to you for like hours.
Can we do it in a cocktail bar next time or something? Can we do it over drinks, please?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me and for being so patient and waiting. I appreciate you guys so much, and honestly, it's been a great conversation. You two are brilliant. Love what you're doing. Love that I've been able to keep it real as well.
Great. But before you go, as you know, on the podcast we at the end always ask our guests for what their fucking normal is. So Tanuke, what is your fucking normal?
So my fucking normal is watching buses with my son.
Oh. Any particular buses or just like all buses?
All of them on YouTube. We have this thing, right? So his complete focus right now, his what he loves is buses. He's always been, to be fair, he's always been like that, but now he's watching them on YouTube. And he will watch whole journeys of people on buses. He'll make the noises, like when the, you know, where the doors close, they go He can mimic word for word it, like pretty much the majority of buses he's either watched on YouTube or been on. He knows where they go. So if you go 188 to Russell Square, like he would literally say, that's my normal. And when I'm trying to get him to calm down, I'll just start naming local buses, and I'll go, so if he's like in a mood or like, I'll be like, Ezekiel, 3212 to North Greenwich Station. Like,
oh, that, my God,
that's my normal. That's his, that's my fucking normal. That's his, that's our normal. But yeah, that's it.
I love that. Oh my God, that's the cutest thing I've ever heard.
But now I think I've become a bit of a bus fanatic, because I'm like, oh, yeah. So, you know, like,
you know it all now. You know it all. Yeah. Thank you so much, TK. It's been amazing.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Fucking Normal podcast. We love making this podcast.
Yes, we do.
We're part of a much bigger team, almost exclusively all parents of disabled children. And our goal is to reach as many people as possible and create a community of support for parents and carers who share our experiences.
So if you've liked what you've heard, please like and subscribe so that we can reach out to more people. You can find more information on this and other episodes at fuckingnormalpodcast.com. That's fkingnormalpodcast.com. You can join us on Facebook and on Instagram at fuckingnormal_podcast. That's fkingnormal_podcast. You can get all the links and more information in the show notes below.
So thank you so much for listening all the way to the end. We'll see you next time.
Bye.